Blog Talk Radio.
Good morning, everyone. This is Johnny Tan, author of From My Mama's Kitchen, Food for the Soul Recipes for Living. Welcome to my weekly From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio show. My guest for this morning is New York Times best-selling author Heather Graham. Heather and I will be discussing about her latest novel titled The Unholy. We will also talk about what is behind America's fascination with the paranormal. Good morning, Heather. Welcome to From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. How are you doing this morning?
I am doing well, and thank you so much. I'm delighted to be here.
It's wonderful to have you on. I'm very excited to listen to your take about what's going on in the paranormal world. Your book, Unholy, is a wonderful, fun read. It is suspenseful, entertaining, and has a nice touch of romance in it. So congratulations.
Oh, well, thank you very much. Thank you.
Let us start by getting to know you a little better. Please give us a quick walkthrough of your life from childhood to the present moment.
Oh, well, Sam, that my mom was born in Dublin and my father's came over from Scotland. His family were from Stirling. And let's see, they wound up meeting and marrying in the city of Chicago and they moved to Florida. So I grew up in Florida. I'm in Miami and I very much still love my home. But I really loved my parents, too. I think they gave me a tremendous amount. My mother's family were incredible storytellers, and they had me believing a lot of things when I was young. And just fun. And, of course, you know, they went through quite a bit to move to the United States, too, so they gave me a real appreciation for the country. I went to grade school at Kensington. I went to middle school at Kenlaw, went to Miami High, and then I went to the University of South Florida. I was a theater major there when I first got out of school. I was doing dinner theater and had some commercial work in South Florida also. My husband and friends were also on this one with me. We were in the world's worst kung fu movie ever. had to film because the star was wearing a toupee, and every time he did a leap, they had to stop to put the toupee back on. So I seriously don't remember the title of it, and I know that it's a blockout because with DVD these days, I do not want anyone ever buying that movie. But I did. I enjoyed what I did, but I have five children, and when we had three of them, it was literally far more expensive for me to go to work than it was to stay home with, you know, child care being what it is. And I really enjoyed being home with them, too. I still, to this day, I'm probably, you know, too much of a mom, and they're all grown up now. But they are the best thing in life, you know, to me, is having children and our children and watching them grow and create the new world for us. But so years and years and years ago, after that, when I stayed home, I started writing, and I indeed started with romance when the category romance explosion was going on. And then, I don't know, I mean, I think we just sig you, and in a way, it's funny because I will literally read anything. I read nonfiction, suspense, sci-fi, fantasy, romance, I mean, you name it, I will read it. So I don't think it was such, you know, I don't think it was really strange to think that you would want to write in different, you know, venues because you read in so many different venues. And I'd also, at the same time I was doing sitting in the category romance, I was sending off her stories and worked with things like Black Cat, Twilight, a Canadian magazine publication. So I was kind of doing both at the same time before it was kind of okay for them to begin to meld. But I went, you know, I'm really thankful because I have done romance, I have done historical, I have done street suspense, some feel-good Christmas fair, and you know, really, you know, just thank God I've had the opportunity to go in so many different directions. And that's kind of the end of the story. I mean, it's not the end, I hope. I mean, still kicking away here. So I'm not one of those people who looks forward to retiring. I'm really hoping something, you know, is on the typewriter as I draw my last breath. So I hope there's a lot more in the future.
From South Florida, you lived in Miami for a very long time, so I presume you're an expert in salsa dancing also.
Do you know, I actually am, because I have a son who's an Arthur Murray instructor. So
That's ballroom dancing. That's ballroom dancing.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So, but that is, but it's also in that. So he's, in fact, we've used that. I have a book out called Dead on the Dance Floor, and I was actually doing pro-am competition at the time I was writing it.
Fantastic.
It was kind of funny because, yeah, everyone at our studio knew who I should kill, but didn't kill anyone real, just certainly not. But we've done, I don't know if it, I actually should look into this now that you mentioned this to make sure that it is up on YouTube somewhere. Should be there, Dead on the Dance Floor, Heather Graham. But we filmed a trailer for the book at my son's studio, and I had a number of actual champion dancers in it. It's, and not to mention I got to be my own dying diva, so it was a great deal of fun. Yeah.
That's fantastic. And the reason I mention that is because I am a ballroom dancer myself. So
are
that's
you?
Good. Yes.
Oh,
one of my
nice.
Late instructor mom was an Arthur Murray dance instructor. This was years ago. And they got me into ballroom dancing about 12 years ago. And, of course, at that time, I was, like, afraid to tell everyone that I'm doing ballroom dancing.
It's, well, you know, Dancing with the Stars. It became incredibly popular. But I think I love it, too, because it's seriously like the best form of exercise known to man. You have such a good time, and it's and it is funny. I mean, when you're in Miami, too, because, you know, some of the different people I've worked with, my instructor, fellow who owns our studio down on Brickell, Adrian Prasad, is actually Trinidadian, but he can, I have never seen anyone who can salsa like him. We will also wind up with a lot of people in there, and it's so cute because we do make presumptions about people, and it's kind of like you'll get somebody in there who's kind of like, no, I may be Cuban, but it does not mean I know how to salsa. You know, I may have to learn. So it is. It's just it's so a very, very fun and enjoyable way to really move, and I think there's something about it that's a tremendous fun to get involved.
The way you write, it's like you do in your dancing. You seem to glide through the pages and pages. It's a sense of elegance and eloquence.
Oh, thank you. Oh, my God, I'm going to keep that. Thank you. What a lovely comment. Thank you very much. Yeah, it's just, I think a lot of it is, it's social. You know, you meet the people you're dancing with, and I think people are totally intriguing because so many people come into it from different perspectives. Some come into it who want to compete, which, oh my God, the competing in the pro-am is just incredibly expensive. Those gowns are, you know, you can get used ones for $1,000 to $2,000, but, you know, if you want your own, the new one, they're like $5,000 just for the gown,
which
you change depending on whether you're doing ballroom, I mean, doing a what are you
Latin
doing?
Or,
rhythm.
Standard,
or,
yes, right.
Right. So it's an interesting world for sure.
Coming back to writing, when did you discover you have a talent to write?
I had done essays, I guess, in high school, you know, for various things. And a lot of people who come into it, whether they were doctors or lawyers or housewives or it just doesn't matter what you did for a living at all. If so many people come into it, they come into it because they love to read so much. And I think that's, you know, the finest training ground is just being an avid, desperate reader who's pretty much still got to have a book at all times. And I'm trying to remember, I think when I stayed home, it was because the third was born. I have five altogether. So when the third was born, I stayed home. And when the fourth was born, I think I actually got my first advance. So it was trial and error. I don't know. It's a different world now, of course, because everything is online and everything is done with computers. But when I had started off, you just mailed full manuscripts off and hoped that somebody would buy one, you know, and you just kept mailing until someone did. And the first call that I got was from Dell, and that was the first book I sold.
That's fantastic. How did you get your ideas for the various books that you write?
I've done a lot. I've done a lot with, especially historically, one of the first things I had wanted to do was an Irish story, and that's basically because when my mom came over, they had some phenomenal bits of history that you wouldn't mm-hmm. get normally.
Mm-hmm.
So that was one of the first things I wanted to do. And then also, we grew up, my husband was born in South Beach, so we grew up in South Florida, but his family is Italian, and they had all moved into Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
So we would make a lot of trips up and down the coast in a van with five children. And a lot of the things that you could do, you know, with kids mm-hmm. on a budget, would be to stop for reenactments,
mm-hmm.
Civil War reenactments, Revolutionary War reenactments, all this type of thing, which that turned out to be one of my favorite things I've ever done, because people who are involved in these, oh, my mm-hmm. Lord, they know their history so well, and they're so intriguing, and you can go to the soldiers' camps, and you can see what they were cooking, and you can go to a medical tent, and I think that that gave me an awful lot to work with. When I moved into historicals, I wrote a book called One More Blue, One More Gray, and One More West,
mm-hmm.
and all that came from the amount of travel that we did. And I think, you know, I think we get our ideas from what intrigues us in life. And
right.
obviously that's changed over, you know, time. And it's kind of like you can tell what my kids were doing at which stage, because I have books on Little League.
Right.
I have books on Ballroom Dance. I have books on diving. I'm a diver. I love to dive. You know, I think we use what we do and what we love in life, which
right.
is why... But I never like to, I mean, like, definitely work on deadlines and know that you have to be disciplined to work. But I'm mm-hmm. still a huge believer in getting out there and finding out what intrigues you, because that's kind of what gives you what you're doing.
Very interesting. So was it difficult to switch from writing novels that are romance-oriented to paranormal mysteries?
Well, no. I mean, I have a couple of, you know, my protagonists in there. There's mm-hmm. there's a sense of relationship in them.
Yeah.
So I don't, in that aspect, they didn't really change. You have people who meet each other and perhaps are helping each other, or they're at odds with each other at first because things are, you know, you're looking at something from entirely different perspectives.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think this is difficult, because I'm, you know, taking that with me.
Mm-hmm.
I think years ago, way before it was acceptable, I mean, way, we're talking more than I want to admit, I had done a book called Every Time I Love You, and that was based on the concept that we may come around again, you know, that
mm-hmm.
there
mm-hmm.
is reincarnation, and that sometimes when something went wrong the first time around, you get a chance to fix it the second. It was, I think, probably, you know, thank God did mm-hmm. fairly well, but it was a little bit ahead of its time. But I found that type of thing wonderful to work with. And I also, I think this is still available, called The Last Cavalier.
Mm-hmm.
And I had done that years ago, and that was about, I mean, how people fall back into the past. Well, in this book, a soldier goes through a mist of gunpowder and finds himself at a reenactment,
mm-hmm.
and everything is kind of looking the same except for the giant Coca-Cola wagon that's set out in the middle of the field. Mm-hmm. So, you know, then he certainly winds up with, you know, help and in the form of this young woman whose grandfather is this massive historian. And then it's kind of like, you know, well, if you find the way, do you both stay in today's world, or do you go back mm-hmm. to the world that the soldier had come from? So that was fun to work with. And naturally that came from the amount of travel we had done through Virginia and up to Gettysburg and, you know, many other places. So it's just everything you do in life is what you use.
Yes, it's a journey that you take. So you are obviously absorbing everything that you have encountered. That leads us to, why is there a growing fascination among Americans about paranormal activities?
Do you know, that is really interesting. And I have a feeling it's because of who we are as a society, in that, I don't know, it's kind of like in general, you know, if you're this, I don't know, perhaps big tough guy, you're not going to say, oh, yes, of course I believe in ghosts, because of the perception people might have, like, oh, you know, that can't be real. But all of a sudden, if you start to have more and more people admit that they're fascinated by the occult, then then it becomes, you know, a bigger thing because mm-hmm. it's kind of like, oh, you know, let me hear about this. But I think since I started doing these, and it's actually been years, and turning the first one I put the ghost in was called Haunted. Mm-hmm. And I think that I'm totally lost on time, but it was several years ago. Once I had done that and gone out on tour and would be speaking, I was absolutely amazed by the people who wanted to share some type of story of something that had happened with them.
Mm-hmm.
I do think a lot that is based on kind of the fact that we don't want to believe that there's nothing more. We certainly want to believe that we go on, and I think we do that for one because, you know, pretty much so by the time you reach adulthood, you've lost family members that you desperately loved and, mm-hmm. you know, people that you really want to see again. So mm-hmm. I think it's really easy for us to believe that there could be much more. And then, of course, if we're religious in any way, we accept that there is a God, and if there is a God, then all these other things can certainly exist as well.
Mm-hmm. Very true. Do you believe in paranormal activities yourself?
Well, okay, that's an interesting question. I definitely believe in something more. You know, I'm one of those people. I have lost yeah. my parents. I lost my only sister. I very, very definitely want to believe. And I'm always trying to, I have that little fight in my head all the time. Like, you know, okay, be logical, think about it this way. And it's like, yeah, but, you know. Mm-hmm. And so I always have that going on. I've had a couple of interesting experiences. Mm-hmm. My father-in-law was somebody I adored. He was very Italian, very Catholic, but he would also watch every Baptist minister on TV. So mm-hmm, I guess mm-hmm. you'd say he was just a super spiritual guy who mm-hmm. really loved everything. So, you know, if angels were going to come for someone, they would definitely come for him. And I was with him right before he passed away, and he'd been in a coma, sat up, reached out his hand. Mm-hmm. And I'm looking in the room, feeling hackles rise, and there's nothing there. And then he laid down and died. So it's kind of like that one. To me, was probably mm-hmm. just a real, you know, and yes, you know, because if I'm talking to physician friends who they might say, oh, no, that was just the neurons going off in his, you know, in his brain. And it's kind of like, well, it could be, but, you know, I don't
yeah.
know. I certainly had a feel there. And I think my favorite story ever is like a friend who's a very tough He-Man in Miami, Metro Dade cop. Mm-hmm. And he was called to an accident one day, and he went to the accident. And they're asking everybody to get the people out of the cars as fast as possible because there's gas all over the place. So he mm-hmm. goes and he gets a man out of the front seat of a car, and the man is telling him, no, leave me, get my daughter. And he can't see the child, but he takes the man out, and the man's telling him that his daughter is in the back seat. She was terrified and hid under the seat.
Mm-hmm.
So he brings the man to the paramedic, and then he rushes back to the car and indeed finds a little girl in the car. He gets the little girl out and brings her to the paramedic and asks about the father, and the paramedic tells him, well, you know, he was dead when you brought him to me.
Mm-hmm.
He died on impact. So it's kind of like, oh, he definitely believes that this man who was dead did, you know, have mm-hmm. whatever it was to tell him to save his daughter. So like I said, that's from someone who would never believe anything, you know. So I found that one just a really, you know, one of the stories that makes you go, wow.
Mm-hmm.
And then,
mm-hmm.
you know, again, I was talking to a physician friend about that, and he goes, oh, it meant that the paramedic was an idiot.
So
it's, you know, I mean, you can take it that way, or, you know, I mean, there's many different ways, but that,
right.
that I thought was really an interesting story.
One
so
of
what
the
about
things,
you?
For me, one of the things
yeah.
for me is that I believe in the spiritual world in some sense, that there are presence. And I think it's a sense of the awareness of yourself, your senses. Your book reminded me about the ghost whisperer, and sometimes I wish myself that I have that ability to do that. There's a certain fascination for me in terms of being able to just have a little bit extra, you know, to, I want to know it all kind of thing.
I do think it's fascinating that, you know, the possibility. And one of the other things that I understand, this one is also
mm-hmm.
from medical friends,
yeah.
that we are not using the majority of the capacity of the human computer, the brain.
Right.
So we don't know how far we will develop other senses
mm-hmm.
in the years to come. So
yeah.
I think that leans towards the possibilities.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely fascinating to wonder. And then I don't know, sometimes when you go to different sites and different places,
mm-hmm.
Like for me specifically, walking into Westminster Abbey or
mm-hmm.
just certain churches or graveyards or battlefields. I mean, Gettysburg, you know,
right.
going down at Gettysburg, that one is just, you feel something wrap around you. So does the energy of history remain, or what
precisely,
is it? You know,
precisely.
Yeah.
And I agree with that. You talk about faith in the very beginning, that you talk about, well, if we believe in God, then we believe in a certain presence and so forth. So even in my own personal experience that I've shared with a friend, as a matter of fact, yesterday over lunch, was there was a point in time in my life where I actually felt and seen the presence of Jesus standing right by my bed. I mean, this is the first time I'm sharing this on the air. Oh, my God, I couldn't believe I'm doing this. But I'm just saying that in the sense that I think if we increase our sense of awareness, whatever that may be, because it may be an aberration that your mind concocted on its own, or maybe there is something there.
That, right.
If nothing else, not necessarily accept it, but respect it. That's what I would use.
I believe that too, but I mean, I definitely, you know, I think part of it is, I think that we all owe it to each other,
and
especially in our country, it's incredibly important that we all respect each other for our beliefs, no matter, as long as you're hurting no one else, you know, whatever
it may be,
it's certainly. But that's, I don't know, again, I think that's a real, you know, I know that I certainly want it to be.
Right. And it's a personal experience.
Everything is going to be. Yes.
Right.
Yes.
And it's a personal experience. It's a sense of awareness. And it's, as you increase your senses, that's what you experience. Of course, there are things that you have to do also to enhance those senses. Coming back to your book, what is the inspiration behind the Unholy?
Unholy came about because my a couple of my children actually went to school with a young lady who's a friend now, their friend of the family. And she works for Legacy Studios in L.A., which are the old, I believe they're the old Stan Winston Studios.
Mm-hmm.
And she's just a sweetheart and incredibly talented. So she had taken us through, she'd gotten permission to take us through to see the studios. And it was just one of the most awesome things I think I've ever done. The imagination of all the things they've created. And then you'll also see something like the really cute, cuddly, you know, that wee pig from the commercials right next to some kind of a terrible zombie with half a face or some type of a dinosaur creature, something like that. So, I mean, just seeing all the imagination and work in a studio was amazing. And then also when you look at some of these creatures, it's like, oh my God, what if that thing started moving? So my trip to see her was definitely the total seed germ, et cetera, for the Unholy.
Mm-hmm.
And of course I added things from, this is a great thing about writing, is you can put any building where you want. You can do all kinds of things like that. So I have placed my fictional studio right behind an old film noir cinema, and they're owned by the same person. And there's also a fascinating museum in the tunnel that connects the two, and it just all happens to have one of the oldest cemeteries in L.A. surrounding it. So that's all kind of, you know, one thing, and then just kind of grows and grows.
Fantastic. So please give us a synopsis of the book.
Well, okay. There's this little museum that runs from the cinema to the special effects studio has all kinds of tableaus in it, and they're tableaus from famous film noir films that were out. And, you know, of course, Humphrey Bogart's in there and a lot of the other amazing actors, Paul Neary, from, you know, the old era.
Mm-hmm.
And there's one that's about mummies, and when the original film was made, somebody had died, and all of a sudden they're there, and the high priest from the mummy thing comes down and murders someone, and then the young man, son of the owner, who happened to be with her at the time, is naturally accused. He was the only one there, and so an FBI investigator who's part of the crew of hunters, which means he's got some special talents, comes out to find out what happened, and he's joined with one of the studio workers, who's actually based on Michelle, my friend, and so they must come together to try to save this young man because they believe in his innocence. and find out what indeed was going on. And of course, there are other bodies that do pop up. Yeah. So,
right.
Yeah.
Do you do an extensive research before writing the books?
I do a lot, but, you know, I don't even know whether to say extensive is correct or not. I do a lot because I really, that to me is kind of like, you know, the icing on the cake for doing this is that you do get to look up so many things, do so many things, and it's all research. I bought at least 5 books on Humphrey Bogart, and, you know, I just devoured them. I loved reading about him. It was fascinating. Mm-hmm. And all kinds of books on the beginning of Hollywood and things like that. So there's a fair amount of research in it. And, of course, I think it helps, too. I really like location. Mm-hmm. It's funny we talk about this, but location as a character. And, you know, that whole Hollywood L.A. area is special and unique in itself. And my daughter, at the same time, I was spending a lot of time out in California because my youngest daughter just graduated from CalArts. Mm-hmm. So, which is out there, and so going out to research California meant I got to see her a lot more often. So that was great.
Were there any particular reason that you went with the various characters in the book?
As far as with my real characters, just because they really fascinate me. You know, people who in real life I found to be fascinating, charming, intriguing, and more fun to find out more about the real person and not just the legend or, you know, the film idol. So definitely in that aspect, yes. And then as far as real people go, I usually put them together from people I have met. Mm-hmm. And it's a fun thing to do. Or I think I use them a lot from people who do certain things, and you just wonder, like, wow, that's such an interesting way to make a living, you know, and it just becomes something that you look more and more into. Mm-hmm. I had, with a lot of them starting this, this book is part of a, you know, run of crew of hunters.
Right.
And when I first started doing it, one of the characters was coming from the United States Marshal's office, and again, I had a young friend who was working as a U.S. Marshal, and so he was great. I went down to see him, and he took me all through the offices to get a real sense of what they do. Mm-hmm. So it's really fun when you can find somebody who is a friend enough to kind of help you see what's going on. So I really enjoyed that.
As a writer, do you use your novel as an escape to live an adventurous life?
No, not really, not unless... I think that I like to use what I've done, and I think we're incredibly lucky. I do a lot with diving because I have a cousin in ballroom dance. We travel an awful lot, and I think that allows you the opportunity to see so many things or do so many things. And then again, of course, even if it's, okay, I will never bungee jump. This doesn't mean that a character might not. But I might see somebody else bungee jump while I'm, you know, on a, one of my groups does a working cruise to Mexico every year. And it's kind of like, yeah, I'll go watch a bungee jump. I'm not going to do it myself. But so that's what I mean. You get to see a lot of things that other people are doing, even if they are things that you might not do yourself, and therefore it just, you know, you get to have the adventures or live vicariously about regarding seeing adventures that other people are into.
Right. That's very true. Now, this is the 6th book of the series. So what are some of the favorite places that you've been to, scariest places, to kind of give you that energy to write about?
Okay, let me see. Especially since I started this, although I must say I've been in the catacombs in Paris, the Capuchin Monastery in Rome. Those are a couple of pretty creepy places to go. Very, very interesting, but kind of creepy. And then lately, I don't know. I think, too, because when the kids were young, the same thing. We just had a fascination with finding things that you could do that you could possibly afford. Mm-hmm. And there are so many cemeteries where, you know, the old gravestones are stories in themselves.
Right.
So we certainly went to a number of you know, cemeteries that were very interesting. And then I think some of them more recently, things have kind of, you know, a lot of them I just fell into,
mm-hmm.
but some of them more recently, I'm headed off tomorrow to a conference called NECON, mm-hmm. which is Northeastern Writers Conference, and takes place at Roger Williams College in Rhode Island.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a tremendously fun convention workshop because it's largely horror writers, and they bring, you know, a lot of the cover artists are there as well. And so it's, mm-hmm. it's just fascinating to see what's going on in that world. And then from there, on the last day, a group of us go and spend the night at Lizzie Borden's house from the, you know, Lizzie Borden took an investigator.
Yes.
Yes, mm-hmm. from that fame, we go and spend the night there, and that is really interesting. Not so much that I don't think if there are haunts, Lizzie hated the house from the get-go, so it's definitely, you know, not haunted by Lizzie.
Mm-hmm.
But if her parents are hanging around, I haven't met them yet. But I did have a tremendous scare because the house is kind of built into, not built in two sections, it's split into two sections, just the way it was. When Lizzie Borden was alive, and the woman who owns it has done a fantastic job. The house is back to almost exactly what it looked like.
Mm-hmm.
But I had been staying in part of it. My husband and I were in the quote-unquote murder room, but mm-hmm. my youngest daughter decided she was chicken, and so I was going to sleep with her.
Mm-hmm.
But you have to go up one set of stairs to get to the one area and then back down and through the house and up another set of stairs to get to the other area. And both my daughters were up in one half of the house with me, and then one of them couldn't go to sleep and wanted to watch some videos.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like,
mm-hmm.
oh, okay, I'll go get the computer. So I went running down and then running across and running up. And there are mannequins in the house.
Oh, no.
They're all wearing period clothing. So as I'm running through, I realized, oh, my God, I can't even look at those mannequins. I'm so afraid they're going to move or reach out or something.
Right.
So I wound up doing it twice. But it was like, I definitely remember being like halfway, a little bit freaky walking up and downstairs, but halfway closing my eyes and racing as fast as I could through the house twice and trying not to look in any direction.
Right.
We've also done a ghost expedition at the Myrtles.
Mm-hmm.
That's online too.
San Francisville,
yeah.
Louisiana. Yeah.
Yes, it is. It is. We had a great time there. It was really wonderful. I had friends mm-hmm. called the Peace River Ghost Trackers up, and we had the entire the company with Mira had set something up, and so we were all, a group of us had the place all by ourselves,
mm-hmm.
and I have never seen anything as dark as Francisville in the middle of the night. So if you came out and you were walking around there, you could just like imagine things all around. It's just a very, I don't know how to say it, I didn't actually see anything, but there's definitely a sense of the past, you know, like the energy from the past.
Right.
And I just did a ghost expedition on the Queen Mary,
mm-hmm.
which
mm-hmm.
was really interesting. So, I mean, I've been very lucky. I've now had the opportunity to do a number of these things. So
mm-hmm.
it's definitely interesting.
Well, like, say, the Myrtle in St. Francisville, because of the live oaks, they are beautiful in the daytime to see the beautiful trees, but at nighttime they can be very
yes.
scary too with the wind blowing.
Yes, they absolutely can. They move, they rustle. They get fog caught in them, yeah.
Were you ever involved in any seances?
Oh, yes, we did. That was another one we did up in, for the publication of a book called The Seance. We planned a promotional event up at the House of the Seven Gables in Salem,
mm-hmm.
Massachusetts.
Mm-hmm.
And that was definitely very interesting. I think that's one of the things that I find, you know, it's funny because everybody goes, oh, you must believe this, oh, you must want to do this because of what you do. But
right.
it also makes you very skeptical and wary, you know, when you kind of, you know, you're always looking for the thing that is far more true, you know, or far more real.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure that I have yet attended a seance where, you know, somebody really had the true talent that you, I'm assuming, need for something like that.
Right.
But, I don't know, it's just, we have attended some that were the worst, most hokey seances of the man. You know, the kind where you can feel the person moving the table with their knees when they're next to you. So I think I have yet to be convinced on that.
That's the one that you have to ask for the winning number, winning lottery number.
Now, I do know a lot of people. It's funny because for years we had a house in in Woodstock, Mass, because we went up to Massachusetts so often, and we would spend a great deal of time in Salem. And I did have friends in Salem who did psychic readings that I would always let my kids go to because they had a sense of, I guess, a sense of feeling a person. Mm-hmm. And it wasn't so much as if they would give you a reading, well, oh, this is going to happen and that's going to happen. They would kind of like read the future and tell them the type of things they needed to think of going forward into the future. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. So I really loved what they did and, you know, would certainly send anybody to talk with them.
Right.
I've also been to the one where we were in New Orleans, one of my favorite places, but we were there for a writing conference and one of the editors who never wants to write a book, never, ever wants to write a book, was with us. And I guess because everybody knew at that point that there are a lot of authors in the city, when she had gone to have her palm read, they told her, oh, yes, your book's going to be published any day now. It was going to be new. I don't know. I already had five kids. They told me I'd be having three. So it was kind of, okay, not so sure about this.
How much of you is in the books that you write?
I think something of us comes out in most of, I shouldn't say not most of our characters, but if not in a character, in, you know, perhaps the essence of the book. So I'm definitely, I'm never going to write anything where I, you know, think that, I don't know, I'm not even trying to say this, so I think that somebody doesn't have my basic philosophy on, you know, kind of like live and let live and be kind to your fellow man kind of thing is going to prosper. So I would say to that extent, characters wind up in books, but or our own feelings wind up in books. But I don't know about any particular characters per se because, you know, hopefully they're all so different. So I guess there's that little essence or seed because you're the one, you know, putting a lot of the words in their mouths, but, you know, you're putting words into the mouths of your serial killers, too, so there you go. So hopefully not.
Are there any particular identity in the book that you are more connected to in some ways, or you'd rather just sprinkle yourself across the board?
I think, you know, probably... You want to identify most with, or, you know, believe that you identify most with the, you know, person who's working hard to make everything come out right. So whether you really would be or not, I don't know, because I am the world's worst coward. So I'm not sure I would put myself in all the situations that people sometimes wind up in who have more courage than I do. I definitely give my characters more courage than I have, that's for sure.
What makes a good paranormal mystery book?
I think the biggest thing is making, oddly enough, this is going to sound very strange, but making it as real as possible. Because if everything else around it is possible, and someone does or doesn't believe in the paranormal, they're more likely to suspend disbelief. As long as everything else moves along solidly, you know, if you're you're much more willing to believe about the paranormal if I'm describing San Antonio and you've been to San Antonio and it really looks like San Antonio. And I think that's one of the hardest things for us. And I know I've definitely made mistakes along the way too, but I think one of the hardest things for us is to make sure that we're as close on things that need to be real as we can possibly be.
You have traveled extensively all over the world in some ways, Europe certainly. Where do you find the rest of the world compared to the United States in terms of the fascination with paranormal?
Well, I think, I don't know. I mean, in a lot of things, I think most of the rest of the world is far more open than we are.
mm-hmm.
many ways. I mean, of course, I said my background is Irish and Scottish, and they pretty much so believe in everything. So not speaking for all of them, just, you know, in general, my family definitely, my grandmother was great because she had an incredibly strong Irish accent, and she would watch my sister and I, and if we were misbehaving, she would always say, you know, you better be watching that or the banshees be getting you in the outhouse. And we were, oh, my God, we were teenagers before.
Yeah.
We were like, wow, we don't even have an outhouse, you know. But she scared us, and we believed every word of it. So, and then I don't know. I don't think, you know, I have friends in Italy. Sometimes somebody was, you know, speaking about some type of an apparition they had seen in a cemetery, and everybody was like, oh, really? You know, what? You know, they just, it's just much more of a, you know, they don't immediately go to what were you drinking before you were in the cemetery.
Right.
You know,
right.
I just think in my travels, most people that I've come across are just more open to the possibilities of things happening.
Is there a possibility because the fact that they are old worlds as compared to America being new world?
Yes, I think that's possibly true. But then again, I think it's strange. Maybe they've just always admitted, whereas, you know, we're kind of saying that, wow, the interest here has grown over the years. So I think a lot more people are, you know, willing to, you know, if something unusual happened to you 20 or 30 years ago, you might be very careful about who you mentioned it to.
Yeah.
Whereas today, if you had that same experience, you might be thinking, wow, I can't wait to see some friends and find out what they think about what happened.
Right.
You know, I think we've just become more open.
Mm-hmm. What do you enjoy most about writing the series?
Oh, well, definitely one of the great things about this series in general is because we're choosing each place very carefully where things are going to take place, where the mysteries are going to happen.
Mm-hmm.
So with this series, I'm a huge fan of San Antonio. I absolutely love San Antonio. So the first book took place in the San Antonio area and had to do with, you know, definitely the Alamo features heavily in
mm-hmm.
it.
Mm-hmm.
The second one takes place, you know, in L.A., and the third one takes place in Chicago, about a wreck on the Great Lakes.
Mm-hmm.
Very fond of Chicago. The first time I think I was scared to death was visiting my family and going to the Field Museum. I must have been 4 or 5, and seeing their mummy exhibit.
Mm-hmm.
I think I had nightmares about those mummies coming to life for weeks. So Chicago is a city I absolutely love. So Chicago gets, you know, its turn. And then from there, we're going to go to Philadelphia, another city I absolutely love. It's just walking the same footsteps as our founding fathers, you know, and everything that went on. And actually the miracle that we did become a country, you know, with the odds that were stacked against us.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I think for me, a lot of it is just the concept of these people that we're creating who do have these special talents going to these cities that I love so much, you know, and getting the opportunity to delve into everything. History, a lot of history. It's kind of a way to write contemporary books and still get your history built in.
Right. Well, it seems like there's a lot of roots associated with these various cities that you had mentioned.
I think so. I hope so. Again, you know, I've used New Orleans several times.
Mm-hmm.
There's just, like you said, there's just something, you know, when we were talking about when you're certain places and there's a certain feel in the air, especially, I guess, because it's one I just mentioned, like when you're in the historic section of Philadelphia, you know, like just looking up at Independence Hall and, you know, just some of the things you do, you just kind of get like this little, I don't want to say chill because it's not chill, really. It's like a warm feeling, almost like, oh, my God, you know, this is where we did it. And then, again, someplace like, you know, heading on out from Philly towards Gettysburg, you have that same sensation about just, the, you know, and I think one of the, again, years ago when I had first been working on these, I was at Gettysburg reading a story about a Pennsylvania farmer. And one son had fought for the North, and one son had fought for the South. And the son who fought for the South actually came home to die on his father's land. He was shot and killed on his father's land. So it's like history, is so incredibly rich. I mean, like, we right. fail mightily in comparison. To come up with anything as intriguing, as sad, as as poignant as real history can be. But it's still kind of there for you and amazing to be able to use.
Right. And you mentioned about the fact that the sense of presence and so forth earlier as well. I feel like these are the things that people can actually feel. I mean, you go to places like, say, a church or a synagogue or a temple, there's a certain sense of calmness, warmth, peace. And then when there are places that you go and you just don't know why, but there's a sense of sadness.
Definitely. Now, is it, you know, again, there's always a question. I don't know. I remember being in Gettysburg one time, the same thing there is. This is true when mist comes in. It's definitely this sensation. We were there once,
right.
and it was just night was falling, and the mist was out, and you just had, like, maybe it is because, you know, as human beings, we know what took
right.
place,
mm-hmm.
you know, or, you know, not disprove the fact that some type of, you know, energy might remain behind,
mm-hmm.
you know, we don't
mm-hmm.
know if that's true or not, but I think it's a good thing. I think it makes us really stop and think and be thankful often for what we have.
Yeah.
And it's just, I think that I find, you know, you certainly can't say I love any war, but
right.
I really find studying the American Civil War incredibly intriguing because you did have brothers fighting brothers. You
right.
had these generals who'd been best friends during the Mexican War. The human situation going on was really, and then too, like, people get pegged by history, but you know, Jefferson Davis, Southern president, was at Cooper Union preaching against secession, you know, just, that's, I mean, there's so many contrasts and things going on, so
right.
it's an interesting period, and I think it makes makes all these different places so interesting.
What would you like for your readers to gain from reading your books?
I think it would be great, you know, if they questioned and thought about their own experiences. And also, I love the idea, would like to think that I can create places that I love so much, like visual enough in their minds that they're like, well, I remember being there. It was great. I want to go back. Or I've never been there. That is someplace I would love to go.
Interesting. Where can someone go to buy your book, get more information about you, and keep up with your latest happenings?
Wow, okay. I'm always on Facebook, Heather Graham Author or Heather Graham Possessory, which is my husband's name. And I can also be found at eheathergraham.com or at the original heathergraham.com. And then I also do something called Writers for New Orleans. So we have information up at writersforneworleans.com.
Please share that with us because you have a special event coming up in New Orleans in December.
I do. Years ago, we had an interesting experience. I was in New Orleans with most of my family who were playing ghosts for me because we were filming a trailer in Lafayette Cemetery for a book called Ghost Walk, which takes place in New Orleans. And we were there that weekend. We left on Monday. And on Wednesday, the same week, Katrina hit Miami, or, you know, that seventh coast there, you know, went across. Gained strength in the Gulf and, of course, you know, whacked New Orleans and that whole Gulf Coast area there.
Right.
And we were, when we first heard about it, which was tricky, too, because only one person had a TV up, you know, in Miami, because we lost so much electric and everything there. Nothing compared to New Orleans, but winds knocked out our electric. So, you know, you just kind of felt like your heart was in your throat, like wondering if the city you'd just been in that you loved so much was even still in existence. Or if, you know, maybe we had some of the last film of the city. So I think that I was, just because I do love the city so much, and just because hopefully I would be for anything, but watching what went on, too, I think was just like so many things you couldn't understand. Kind of like we can drop food and water in deserts across the globe, but we can't get water to our people who are dying on a bridge. We can drop newsmen, but not, you know, not food and help. So I do believe that a lot of the country was very upset and disturbed by what happened in New Orleans. And I think our people were great even though, you know, you hate to admit it, but the government on every level kind of failed the people of New Orleans. But they were super grateful to the American people who would come together and, you know, try to get food, clothing, shelter, you know, do everything that they could to help them. But I was back in the city pretty much as soon as I could be after everything that had happened, and was walking down the street with a couple of friends who lived there and who were, you know, telling me their experiences of what had happened.
Mm-hmm.
And they were saying that the one thing that people need to do is get back to work. They're grateful for the help, but they wanted to work. And if you're in New Orleans and you want to work, you've got to have the tourists come back in.
Mm-hmm.
So I was with a friend of mine who does costuming and works with me a lot, and we were kind of like, okay, well, all right, well, we can get people in, you know, we can have a conference, we can have a writer's conference. It's like, what kind of writers? We don't care. actually, we don't even care if you write. Maybe you read. So it was set up for a conference for writers who write, you know, virtually anything, so that hopefully we have something for everyone.
Yeah.
We bring in agents, we bring in editors, and we also have a pretty fun, I don't think that's grammatically correct,
mm-hmm.
we have a program that allows for a lot of fun events too. We always hit on something. Last year was the 150th anniversary
mm-hmm.
of the Civil War, and so we had a cocktail party where everyone was dressed up anti-vellum, which is really funny too, because
yeah.
One of my closest friends from the North was playing Lee, and my sons were playing Custer and Grant. So we had a mishmash going, but we had a wonderful cocktail party and party after that, you know, based on all of these different historical characters. And
mm-hmm.
There's questionnaires, and you can guess, and you can win things like a Kindle Fire or something. So the
mm-hmm.
idea being is that we have something going for everyone. And
mm-hmm.
Then on Saturday night, we do a dinner theater. And this year, you know, we try to gear it to things that are going on. This year's the 100th anniversary since Bram Stoker's death. And then
mm-hmm.
It's also the 100th anniversary of the Titanic.
Mm-hmm.
So we're a little bit, you know, we are surely for fun, because this year
mm-hmm.
we're doing Vampires of the Titanic on Christmas Eve. So that's the title of our dinner show. So, but we do have a tremendous amount of fun. We try to offer something for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, trying to make it so that people who come who want to write have access to
mm-hmm.
Editors and agents. From this year, we definitely have Paula Aguilar from Mira, Tom Kosmer from Berkeley Putnam. So,
mm-hmm.
I mean, we definitely have people to see. And then
yeah.
also our keynoters this year are Jonathan Mayberry, who's been doing all kinds of things.
Mm-hmm.
We have David Morrell, who wrote First Blood and created Rambo, and trying to offer something for everyone, basically.
Mm-hmm.
And also bring all of these people, you know, into the city to spend money in the city and keep it up. And then we also have special fundraisers where people donate, and we have raffle tickets. And those
mm-hmm.
Have gone sometimes to the Library Foundation, sometimes to the homeless shelter.
Mm-hmm.
And we always have something very special that we do.
Wonderful. That's a fantastic thing that you're doing for the city of New Orleans, and being a former Louisianan myself, so I really appreciate what you're doing.
Thank you. It's I have so many friends in that state. Like I said, I love that state, very loyal Floridian, but I do. One of my closest friends is in Lafayette.
Yeah.
I also go to HOMA every year for program put on by the Nichols. Yeah, Nichols College.
Yeah. Nichols State
really
University
mm-hmm.
in HOMA, Louisiana. By the way, we're coming close to the end of the show. Do you have a recipe for living you would like to share with our listeners this morning?
Well, basically, my recipe for living is pretty much so going by the golden rule, and that means that we try to go through life being as good and decent to our fellow man as we can possibly be, and hope for that in return. And I guess to expand upon it, I'm a huge believer in, you know, the concept that
mm-hmm.
we all are different people. We have different beliefs,
mm-hmm.
Different dreams and hopes, and we should respect those in each other. And kind of, it's so funny because in the way it's it's the golden rule in a way. It's kind of like the, what the Wiccans believe in is, you know, do as thou will as long as thou harm no other. And I'm sure that was paraphrased wrong. But basically, that's the basic concept. And I think it's important that we look after each other.
Wonderful. That's a wonderful recipe for living. As an accomplished author, what three things can you suggest to new writers to fine-tune their craft?
Okay. First thing is, if you really want to write, the most important thing that you do is write. And usually you want to be a writer because you've loved to read and you've gotten so much enjoyment from reading. So think about the things that you love to read, why you love to read them, and let that guide you and make sure that you write something that you really love and that fascinates you and makes you want to write. Secondly, I say go to everything you can where you are going to have the opportunity to meet other authors, to meet agents, to meet editors. And you can get a real feel not just for the craft of writing, but for what is going on in the business these days. And I also suggest, I mean, now everybody cannot travel. This is very true. But pay attention online. You can join all kinds of groups. You can join Mystery Writers of America, International Thriller Writers, Romance Writers of America, which is an extremely wonderful and powerful group. But there's, look them up. You know, you've got the web today, so look these things up and join a group. Even if you're not able to go to meetings, you can get online and find out what's going on with people. Although I'm really a people person, so I enjoy going to everything I possibly can. But it's very important that you realize it's a craft and a business, and that you follow learning about the business of it and really working on your craft, because you're not trying to write just one book. You know, you're trying to have a career as a writer. So those are the things that I suggest. And also buy something called Writer's Digest, Writer's Market, because this is a wonderful book that tells you who is buying what where. And just be careful that you keep up to, I would say, you know, the newest or newer editions, because editors move all over the place so often.
Very true. What can we expect from you during the second half of this year?
Wow. Thank you. During the second half of this year, the next two books in this series will be out, and those are The Unspoken, and this one takes place in Chicago, a lot in Lake Michigan, and has to do with a ship that sank in the late 1800s and what the ship was carrying, and an Egyptian society that takes place in Chicago, and all kinds of things like that. Hopefully scary and a lot of fun. And the last one is The Uninvited, which takes place in Philadelphia and begins with a murder of a tour guide, costume tour guide, in one of the historic houses. And then I also have a couple of books coming out at Christmas, reprints from hardcovers, and A Season of Miracles and An Angel for Christmas. And those will be out in November.
Fantastic. And a quick final thought. How has writing the paranormal series impacted you personally?
Oh, it's given me all these opportunities to go more and more places where paranormal activity has taken place. the opportunities to go and see and do things has been fantastic. And also, one of the most important and nearest to my heart are the amount of people who will come up and tell me their experiences. So I really enjoy that.
Fantastic. Heather, thank you for the great recipe for living that you had shared with us earlier, and for spending this hour with me on From My Mama's Kitchen Talk Radio. To all our listeners, thank you for being with us. Please join me next Tuesday morning. My guest will be author D.J. Remrol. D.J. and I will be discussing about his latest book titled The Next President, How the Man Defines the Office. For additional information about this show and future shows, please go to FromMyMamasKitchen.com. Thank you for listening, and have a great week. Heather, thank you again, and have a great day.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.